This is John Floridis, and you're listening to Musicians Spotlight. On this program, we'll be checking in with Montana singer-songwriter and actor Nick Spear. But first, we begin with a visit with Andrew Davey and Kevin Jones of the British folk rock band Bear's Den. This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. I'm very pleased to welcome Andrew Davey and Kevin Jones of Bear's Den. Great to have you guys in the studio.
Thanks for having
us. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, perhaps I should have you introduce yourselves right now here so that folks get a chance to distinguish which voice is which.
Hi, I'm Kev.
And I'm Davey.
All right, we got that all. Now, you go by Davey?
Yeah, well, friends call me Davey, and I thought we'd made it.
Well, we've just met, so I want to make sure I do it.
Davey's great.
Okay, all right. Bearsden.com is the name of their website. The most recent recording, which is real recent, So That You Might Hear Me is the name of that. Now, you guys are from the UK. Where specifically in the UK are you guys from?
I'm from West London. I think we're kind of both from West London, but Kev's kind of been everywhere. I've sort of been West London most of my life and recently moved to North London.
So. Okay. And did you two know each other? This is one thing I don't know. I know I've researched quite a bit of stuff, but the real early stuff I don't know. Have you guys known each other for a long time, or was this something more recent collaboration?
It's about 10 years now, I think. Yeah. We met through, through mutual friends who were playing music in London. And then Davey was in a different band. I was in a different band. We got hanging out. We started a band, sort of short-lived, before this one. But I think learned a lot of stuff from doing that and making mistakes. And then took a bit of time out and went, okay, what did we learn? And did Bear's Den, and that's been 7 years now, I think, thereabouts.
And I read a little bit about the background of how the band came together. My understanding is that there was lots of tea and pints of beer that were consumed in the in the discussion and the formation.
How things have changed. Yeah, that's right, though. It was just I think before we started this band, we wanted to make sure that we were as on the same page as possible. And so, the first, I don't know, six months, 9 months was a lot more listening to records and a lot less playing music, which I guess is probably quite rare or quite weird. But I think for us, it was almost quite a lot of making music. You can kind of do anything. It's kind of figuring out an aesthetic or something that you aspire towards, or a certain bunch of artists that you trying to figure out what it is about what they do that you respect so much, or songwriters, musicians, whatever it is, or anything really. We talked about movies. There's a lot of trading and films and things like that, and I think it just helps create a bit of a internal culture behind what you're doing. So yeah.
My next question is, I'm smiling as I'm about to ask it because it's a little comedic, but I am curious about, did you find in these conversations, was there a marked difference between the tea and the consumption of pints? in terms of what came out, what came out of the discussions?
It's a good question. I think it's easy to dream when you've got a pint of beer in your hand. So I think that's necessary for the the dreaming bit, and then the tea the next morning or the coffee is there for the practical reality of how to achieve something.
Sobering realities.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, great, great. Let's talk about this most recent project, So That You Might Hear Me. Something that I read, one of the quotes from your promo material, and it kind of describes the album, and I want to kind of use that as a jumping off point. The album started out as an attempt at trying to communicate with someone honestly. Our thoughts are not all rational, not all considered or tied up with ribbons and bows. This album is an attempt to reveal the honest and difficult challenge of communicating with anyone you really care about. And it seems like that's something that's been in your music throughout the history of the group, but maybe this is more of a, I don't know, I'm trying to think of how I could describe, it seems like it's more focused, or how would you describe that?
I think it's just more direct in a way. It's a bit less, there's less gaps, I think. The album is quite conversational at times and is kind of trying to reach someone who you feel like you can't reach. It's in those moments that I'm most drawn to writing songs, so I think to some extent it has been there forever. But I think it was almost like trying to whittle down and distill what this band is, or what the songwriting process is. It's in a way, it feels like we have this song, Blankets of Sorrow, and it ends with the album title. And we perform it live, in the audience, without any microphones or anything. And when we do that, it's this kind of weird, eerie moment when you finish the album saying that. And it's the line is just I only speak so that you might hear me. And it's it's this line that means nothing and everything. It's sort of it's very personal and very general, but it's the whole record to me is just a really, it's a very personal biographical information or something.
Mm-hmm,
and then on top of that, I think it's really interesting and cathartic being in a room with all these people performing that.
Hailing all of your virtues as flaws, while the ice on the floor starts to thaw, and the cracks and the veins start to form, all I deny. Paralyzed, your stubborn mind can't see the woods behind the blankets of sorrow. No one could ever reach or pull you out, sleeping as the sleep just falls to crystallize your crimson. See, the water only reflects what it's been shown. And I know I should not stay. There you go, you push me away.
John Florida is here on Musician's Spotlight, and I'm joined today by Bear's Den, Andrew Davey, and Kevin Jones. I don't mean to just throw out quotes I've gotten from the promo thing, but there's some really good, and some of these come from, I think, some other interviews, but I like this one. The aim was, and we're speaking in regards to specifically, I think, the content on the most recent recording, So That You Might Hear Me. The aim was to be more honest and instinctive, like when you blurt something out and can't take it back. So you have to deal with it. I love that concept because it seems like lyricists so often labor over, you know, when you're creating a song or prose for that matter, poetry,
yeah.
You know, the tendency is to want to go back and that's why we have editors,
you know.
So talk to me a little bit about that. I think that was a really cool concept.
Yeah, like I think, again, I guess it was just trying to be less of a writer about it. I'm like, I think... like, songwriting is weird. It's sort of hard to take yourself seriously or something as a songwriter. I find it quite sort of, it's a strange term or something. I find it weird, but I think I'm also very wary of just making things that anyone could kind of do. I really like detail in songs, and I like being able to like feel like you know the person behind it. Well, that's the artist that I like do that. And so, yeah, I think, how do you do that? It's like, well, when you say something and it slips through your like filter process, like, why did you say it then? Why did that need to be said? And like work back from there, like, because I think you can get so locked in your own head with when it, especially with like, I mean, essentially sitting down and listening to the same chords over and over and over again for days, months, years, you're going to be in your own head a little bit. So I think it's like when you break out of it and you do something that surprises you, that's when good songs tend to sort of, or good ideas tend to be sparked. And if it surprises you, maybe it'll surprise the listener. If it's interesting to you, maybe it'll interest the listener. It's like, that's the thing, you got to try and like, try and interest yourself, try and motivate yourself to want to finish the song, to go like, how can I keep this interesting or something?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you want to elaborate on that?
I think what Dave is saying is exactly right. I don't write the lyrics, so it's all down to him. Yeah.
You're deferring? Is that what you're going
to say? Exactly.
Not every river is gonna make it, is gonna make it back to the sea. And I have followed you to the delta, down every branch and tributary. And in the cracked earth of all my hoping, we're gonna get there eventually. Not every river is gonna make it, is gonna make it back to the sea. In the dry river cemetery, will you wait there for me? In the dry river cemetery,
this is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm speaking today with Andrew Davey and Kevin Jones, although we may call Andrew Davey periodically, so not to confuse our listeners.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. We've kind of touched a little bit on this, on my next question, by talking about getting into an audience and unplugging the instruments and working that connection. But I know that you guys are road warriors. Road dogs, how we road pick dogs. Pick your phrase. You spend a lot of time on the road, spend a lot of time getting this music in front of people. Talk to me about what why that is so important. I mean, obviously I know that within today's music industry, that's, if you're going to survive, you have to do that. Yeah. But it seems like you guys are like looking at your schedule as we sit here for this interview in early June 2019 and look at the lineup of where you've been giving up, coming up to today and going forward. Yeah. A lot of dates.
Mm. Mm. It was funny when we started, we did do all the things we discussed, lots of pints of beer and cups of tea and conversations. Then quite quickly we found ourselves on the road as a band. So it's almost like how it was born, and it feels odd to not be doing that in a way. And as Davey was saying the other day, which I totally agree with, that I feel like, you know, you kind of, you're demoing songs and then you're recording songs and you're mixing them and you're mastering them and you're figuring out the artwork and then the record comes out. But until you're actually playing it live in front of people, it feels abstract. And then that's when the songs become real. So I think it's, for us, we're always working towards that sort of, that chasing that reality.
One of the things that I noticed is that you've taken your music into some really large venues. Would you just call it the O2 Arena?
Yeah, we have played at the O2.
Yeah, yeah, and some other large arenas. And as we are speaking here, again, in early June of 2019, you're about to play the Top Hat in Missoula. Can you talk about whether or not you have to adapt the music at all, going from, you know, huge arenas to clubs or in anything in between or on either side of it? Stadiums? I don't know if you guys have played stadiums.
Yes.
A little bit. But I think one thing I definitely think is really inspiring is our sound engineer, Scott Humphreys. He doesn't see a 200 cap show as any less important than a 2000 cap show, and nor do we. So, and in terms of the standards of what he's going to make sure he's presenting, he's like, his ethic and work ethic with that and approach to that inspires us to sort of, obviously there are times when you have to move things around a little bit or don't play certain songs because you can't bring certain, like, I mean, certain people with us. But having said that, I mean, we tour with four session musicians everywhere, whether it's 2,000 cap or it's 5,000 cap or it's 100 people. We'll always try and do that. I'd say Scott's quite a big factor in that. And also, I think we just want to make sure we're not kind of giving people less than what we've created as well. If you're going to work so hard on making an album, I think it's important that you don't compromise too much when it comes to performing live.
Yeah, the only challenge is really playing larger venues and trying to create or maintain the same sense of intimacy that we can at a smaller show. So really, it's like when you're playing a small show, you're getting the best of all of the things, really. And when you're playing a larger one, it's a challenge. We still manage it, but you just have to be more creative with the space or that other way you mic things up or whatever.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, because I think where I was going with it in a way was like, well, do you, in a larger venue, do you have to feel like physically you play the music differently, you know, you're trying to express it out forward and kind of matching the energy of a larger space. But I like what you're saying, rather than doing that, you're trying to bring that space down into your world artistically, musically.
Exactly, yeah.
Built our home out on the slopes, Pompeii beneath, she lay above. And how she haunted our home, how she haunted our home. And you were God in my eyes, above the clouds, above the skies. You were God in my eyes, you were God. Took me walking through the town, showed me the statues underground. Said, just don't they look at peace? Well, sometimes I wish that was me. And I was the son you always had, tugging at your coat while you were sad. I was the son you always had. Yeah, I was the son you always had. Don't cry, hold your head up high. She would want you to, she would want you to, please. Just don't cry, hold your head up high. She would want you to, she would want you to. Stay in the car and wait. There's just some things I have to say. But don't you know I miss her too? I miss her just as much as you. So my father and my son, as you end what she's begun, you'll lie patient by her side. With roses red come lilies white. Too young to understand the flowers slipping from your hands. I was too young to understand. Yeah, I was too young to understand. And I was too young to understand the flowers sleeping in her hands. I was too young to understand. Yeah, I was too young to understand. She will want you.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight, and I'm speaking today with Andrew Davey and Kevin Jones of Bear's Den. And with the mentioning again of the band's name, we have to talk about this because you are in Montana as you are doing this interview. And I don't know if you know this or not, but there are a number of bears in our state. And so, listeners, I'm sure I would be remiss, in fact, to not ask a little bit about where the title comes from.
We were talking during our cups of tea and numerous beers. I think we were talking a lot about the children's story Where the Wild Things Are. And we thought that that was a really interesting idea of the idea of this kid sailing off in his imagination and going to a world where he can kind of control everything and be, you know, be in charge of these things, but eventually sailing home and it only being like an hour or something. That sort of, I think something about that felt like that's how it should feel when you listen to an album. Mm. You should feel like you're sailing away into some other place or some other, like some different space in your head or whatever, and then you come back afterwards or whatever. And I think there's something about that that was very like, yeah, that feels right. And then coincidentally, Bear's Den is also the name of a town just north of Glasgow, next to a place where my grandparents lived and my mum grew up, and where I used to write a lot of the first songs of Bear's Den. I wrote there, and subconsciously I think I must have, that's just one word, it's just mm-hmm. called Bear's Den, and like, yeah, but I think some where along the way that kind of may have been a subconscious cool band name idea. And I think we both just thought it sounded right quite quickly, felt right. So, yeah.
Well, I think that the next step for the band would be to actually come back to Montana and find a bear's den and then record the album.
Yeah.
We keep joking about how we're going to get eaten by bears and then dragged to a den, and that'll be the newspaper headlines or whatever.
Bear's Den dies in Bear's Den.
Exactly. The irony would be probably enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, as I'm saying that, I'm thinking of some wildlife biologists that would want to strangle me for suggesting that we walk into a bear's den. We're not condoning actually walking into a bear's den, listeners, just so we are clear about that. Bearsden.com, though, is the name of the website for the band. So That You Might Hear Me is their most recent recording project. Thank you so much for making time to come in and chat with us here on Musician Spotlight. It's been a pleasure getting to know you guys and talking shop.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
You're not drinking as much as you used to. I'm the same old, same old.
Andrew Davey and Kevin Jones of Bear's Den. We'll be back with more Musicians Spotlight and hear from Whitefish, Montana singer, songwriter, and actor Nick Spear.
Well, I was out fetching wooden.
Welcome back to Musicians Spotlight. In this half hour, we'll be featuring Montana singer-songwriter and actor Nick Spear.
We like our heroes fallen. We like our poets gagged. We keep the crowd unconscious, blindfolded with a flag. We like our leaders liars. To grease the fear machine, to keep the markets moving, we need all eyes on screens. With the east underwater and the west on fire, as the north melts down but the fields get drier, only wise men know where wisdom goes when the world ties itself in knots. Our artists starving, we'll leave the poor to toil. We trade our hungry god young blood for oil. We blame this blight on the brown, we only answer to laws divine. We keep our faith in compassion, but fuck you, I got mine. With the east underwater and the west on fire, as the north melts down but the sails climb higher, only wise men know
where wisdom goes when the world ties itself in knots. We're frogs in a pot. Underwater and the west on fire, the north melts down as the fields get drier. Dawn light breaks as the darkness creeps. A half world wakes while the other half falls asleep. Over 4 billion years, only to lead us here, arguing ideology. So say another prayer, ignore the facts laid bare. We're just another lair for future geology. Teachers scrambling, we'll cook their books for control. We'll keep the media rambling while we shoplift the polls. So sing of God and country, holy Roman. We all sing the West on fire. The West on fire. The West on fire.
This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. I'm very pleased to welcome to the show Nick Spear. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
How you doing? Great to have you on the program and have you drive down from the Flathead for those listeners who are outside of Montana. The Flathead Valley, Whitefish, Montana, where Nick is based out of, is north of Missoula, where we're doing this recording in, it's the bleak midwinter of 2019.
Boy, howdy.
Yeah.
It's kind of scary coming down here.
Yeah. So the drive down was a little adventurous. So thanks for making that drive. Nick is a singer, songwriter, and soulmate, I saw on your on your website. I like that. We can talk about that a little bit, perhaps. And his most recent recording is Train Wreck of a Heart, which follows West Dakota Snakes and a couple other projects, if I'm not mistaken, before that.
Yeah, I had actually one right before that. Well, I know a couple other projects. There was a solo album that I released in 2011 or 12, and then a vinyl 12-inch single to commemorate the mining disaster.
Right. I remember that. Well, and, you know, I was thinking on the way down to this interview, when I say singer-songwriter, there's definitely a difference to what you do with that craft. I mean, singer-songwriter can apply to a lot of different people in a lot of different ways to be a singer-songwriter. And, you know, one of the things that comes to my mind when I think of your work is I can't help but think of your music and the fact that you are an actor and an instructor of theater at Flathead Community College here in Montana. And that those things, they're very much connected to me when I listen to your music and also just in general. I think that it's obvious in listening to your music in a lot of different ways. And we can talk more about that. But that is very much a part of what you are and who you are as an actor and theater person as well.
It's interesting because I've never really felt totally accepted or that I fit into the music scene or musical theater,
oh, really?
Which is where I made a lot of my living before I moved to Montana. I've always kind of felt like this weird oddball, kind of on the outskirts of both. And like, you know, well, that's too musical theater to be in music. And or that's too singer-songwritery to be theater.
So, very interesting.
Kind of off in my own campground, I guess.
Well, does that in some ways make it easier to go back and forth between those two things? Because you don't fit, you know what I'm saying? You don't get completely pigeonholed and stuck in one box or the other.
I think it's both. I think it makes it easier to flip back between the two, but if there's... My fear is that I'm going to write something. I mean, when I'm acting, I feel like I'm acting. And when I songwrite, I try to tell the truth. Like I really do. Whether or not it's a different voice, I still try to. It doesn't have to be factual mm-hmm. or autobiographical, but it has to feel like the truth and honest. And I kind of do that as a counterpoint to the performing other people's material, you know?
Well, this brings up a couple of different things. One, I was going to say that when I have interviewed musicians who have some kind of theater background or acting background, I often wonder if they have a better connection to the concept of keeping the story in focus and putting the story in quotations there. You know, whether it's musical or the more obvious thing would be lyrical. But
oh, totally lyrical.
I mean, when I listen to your lyrics, it seems like I have a real strong sense of character and an arc. And
not a whole lot of room for the listener, which is interesting because, you know, that's what a lot of songwriters try to do is try to leave room for the listener. And I try to be as specific as I can to what's in my head, which can be good if you're into that. And I think it can also have the effect of holding someone's head and making them look at a painting. You know, look at this. Listen to these words. It's important, even though it's not.
Uh-huh. And then also the concept of inhabiting other people's songs.
Oh, sure.
That seems to me like there'd be a direct
correlation. I'm way more comfortable playing and singing other people's songs than my own. That's changed in recent years. I'm a lot more comfortable with my own voice and feeling like it's not something a voice I'm putting on. But that took, I mean, that's taken probably 10 years of songwriting to just say, don't try to make this sound like Leonard Cohen. Don't make this sound like Bowie. Just try to be whoever you are right now.
I'm gonna steal the Star of India, sneak it past the sleeping slips. I'm gonna take her under midnight, past the warships, and by the pink dawn I'm long gone. So baby, let the Coast Guard come. They'll never find me, 'cause I'll vanish on the tide to sail the ocean wide. So if you got nothing to tell, I'll be setting sail out on the bending blue under the moon. If you got no place to go, I'm gonna blow this tourist taco stand, and tomorrow couldn't come too soon. Doubt I'll even make the news with my pleasure cruise, 'cause all the plastic passers in their skateboard shoes are busy waxing their new cars and dyeing their gray hair. So if you got nothing to tell, I'll be setting sail out on a bending blue under the moon. Took the time to know your native son, but it doesn't matter to the soccer moms or the canyon bombs or the losers playing holy songs or what they sample things who don't belong.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight, and I'm speaking today with Nick Spear. Nick, let's talk a little bit about songwriting. You said that it took you a little bit to kind of get into your comfort zone with writing your own material and not just inhabiting, I should say not just, there's a skill to inhabiting somebody else's music for sure and doing, you know, unique covers and arrangements of other people's tunes. But when it comes to being a singer-songwriter, you eventually have to step away from that. Talk about when that actually started and, you know, was that pretty early on in your musical development? Or, I mean, you said you'd only been writing your own music for like the last 10 years, well, or was you only were comfortable in the last 10 years?
Only comfortable in the last 10 years. I've been writing music since I was like 14. But I think it started happening to the point where I really felt like there was my own voice probably when my daughter was born. I kind of had this moment of, oh my God, I'm going to die. Well, it's what you just kind of have. And what am I going to leave her? I kind of had this like crisis of what am I doing? Why am I acting for a living? As at the time I was a musical theater performer in San Diego. And what am I in a couple just around the country projects? And what am I doing? Why am I pretending to be other people? But my first album, A River Below, is the first one I can go back to, first project I can go back to and listen. The songwriting is there. And I go, yeah, I can still hold that up and say, yeah, I think this is good. I think it fits my aesthetic. So I feel like I've been comfortable with writing songs for a decade.
And interesting that what what your epiphany was, it sounds like, was more of an artistic one. It wasn't, you know, a lot of men in particular, I think, would get to that point. They have their first child and they're thinking, you know, more of the the provisions, of the more, you know, kind of concrete provisions,
right.
Food, shelter, and so forth, financial assistance.
Yeah, and I was thinking, but, what do I leave?
Yeah, yeah.
What do I leave for her?
And let's talk about how that developed as once you got past that first project and moved on to your second.
Yeah, I got past the first project, and then some time went past, and then I released an album in 2017 called West Dakota Snakes, which was just really a sort of a compilation of recordings I'd been making over the past 5.5 years. And then, like last summer or spring, I just kind of started this train wreck of a heart project that had just some kind of weird force behind it. It just wanted to happen. And I went on a little vision quest throughout Montana. I realized I'd never been out to central Montana and where I've been here for a quarter of my life now. And I wanted to explore the state and I wanted to write songs that made me feel that sense of expansiveness that the landscape has. And Montana's such a trip because it's bucolic and it's rural in places, yet it's still underpinned by the same technology the rest of the country has. You know, we're still online. It's the land of tweeting cowboys. So I was like, how do I sonically capture that? How do I basically do a metaphorical oral equivalent of a digital haystack, I guess. And so as long as everything sort of fit that sound, as far as subject matter for Trainwreck of a Heart, which I released this last October, they're all, if there's a song on there, it has a geographical location in my brain, not necessarily in Montana, but I wanted it to evoke a sense of space.
And was that present at the time when you wrote it, or is it more, or could it have been in some cases when it was finished, you then associate it with, you know what I'm saying? Was that geographical location?
Chicken or the egg. I think it's a little bit of both. Yeah, there was probably some kind of rubbing off on both of those aspects. In fact, when I originally thought about, okay, I'm going to make this an album, I thought, what if I could geocache an album digitally? What if you could download an album, go to a spot, and if you're within the geofence, you can listen to that song while you're there, and then it closes forever. And you can never hear it again from your device. And people I talked to said, why would you want to do that? And I said, because that's what life is. That's what it used to be before Facebook.
Yeah.
You see that one girl in the visitor center of North Rim of the Grand Canyon, and you never see her again, and you don't know what happened to her.
Right.
That's why.
Right.
And people thought, and then I realized I have no idea how to do that, so I just did the old-fashioned thing and made an album.
I like that. I like that idea, though. That's a great concept.
Trademark next year.
You're
No one's allowed to do it.
First tree to turn was so brave and brazen, and on the morning the cold-eyed raven cried Indian summer, the gray moved in to stay. The first leaf to fall surrender quietly, like Jesus on Holy Thursday. And we heard the crackling radio voice say, mountain snow, valley rain, spinning weather vanes. One more year is lost again in the wind. Cold air so clean it hurts to breathe it, and smoke from a chimney can make you believe in a time Rockwell painted, when the world was so safe and sane. Mountain snow, valley rain, one more summer wanes. The daylight fades and I hear your name on the wind. Last goose to fly, the flock all crazy, but as the moon rose up over the valley, she saw how the river reflected the light like a long crimson vein. Mountain snow, valley rain, frost on window panes, the daylight fades and I sing your name to the wind.
Nick, we wanted to talk about one tune in particular from the most recent project, Train Wreck of a Heart, and that's the song Born to Live in Love with You.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about this song and how it came to be and some of the stuff that went along with it.
My friend Ryan, who's this great, like, deadhead cowboy up in the Flathead, gave me this wall hanger of a banjo from 1910 or something. And I sort of fixed it up, and he said, if you can fix it up, you can keep it. And so I fixed this thing up, and then I was in a play, which my wife directed, up in the Flathead, called The Miraculous Journey of Edward Tulane. And I was sort of this storytelling accompanist, but I only told the story through playing. I didn't say anything. And so I used this banjo, and I composed all the music for the transitions and the underscore in this play. And one of the things I came upon was this cool riff that I liked. And then I kept playing it. And I thought very consciously, what if I take this banjo riff and make it a compound meter of 5/4 or 4 and then 6? And then I set up a bunch of rules, like, okay, the core of the song has to be done all with the banjo, and it has to be in 4/4 and then 6/4. And so I ended up taking the banjo head and scratching that for the main percussion component and playing this. And then I sort of made random words that didn't make any sense and recorded them, just syllables, and then fit words to match the vowels that I had sung. And so the song really did just kind of write itself. I just wanted it to sound like how I feel when I think about the expansiveness of Montana. But how do I also get the technology in it? You know, Montana's remote, but it's not nowhere. We have running water, we have electricity, we have the internet. And I thought, I can put some really weird sounds underneath it. And so what I ended up with, which is this thing that sounds like the Dust Bowl meets Blade Runner 2049, which I love. And then I went out and made a video for it in all these weird ghost towns. Some of the ghost towns were public. Some of them were on ranchers' land, private land that I had to ask permission. And people who drove by saw me out there like Uncle Rico and Napoleon Dynamite filming his own football video. It was kind of ridiculous, but I wanted to just kind of capture it, and that became the first track on the album.
Now, let's go back to this, the whole thing of finding these ghost towns, because listeners outside of Montana need only look at a map to see this is an enormous state.
Yeah,
there for a state in the United States of America. It's a huge state, and there's not a lot out there in some places of Montana. So you're going out there in what most people would say the middle of nowhere.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to find these ghost towns, which to I think a lot of people, it's almost like a myth. Like, there's actually ghost towns? Yeah, there are.
Yeah, there really are. The first ghost town I was going to was Barker and Hughesville, which are right next to one another, and I chickened out. It was like 5 p.m. by the time I got there, and it was like this really windy road, and the river ran over the road in three different spots, and I just thought, I just got this horrible feeling of like, I hadn't passed anyone in 2 hours. I had to go 4 more miles. My GPS said 50 minutes. I thought, I'm not going to do it. I'm chickening out.
That's such a Montana phenomenon. Say that again.
Wait.
It says how many miles?
Oh, yeah. My GPS said you had to go 40 miles, and it said 50 minutes, which, you know, I don't really believe in, like, you know, I got a bad feeling, so I didn't get on the plane. But mm-hmm. I had a bad feeling, and so I didn't go down that road. It just happened.
To a ghost town in the middle of nowhere, Montana.
But exactly. But what happened was I ended up getting to a town called Giltage, which is in the Judith Mountains past Lewistown, which turned out to not be a town, but a single ruin of a church, which is in the video that's on YouTube of Born to Live in Love with You. And it's like the best shot, because I got there when it was like the sun was almost down. And so I ended up going there, and I went to Castletown and Coolidge. And then I ended my little ghost town tour with an actual gig in Bannock Ghost Town in the Methodist Church.
And then did you kind of go with this whole linking in with, you know, a ghost town in Montana, but put a Facebook page event and try to get people to get out to it?
I did put a Facebook page event. And I had friends from all over the country, like, toying with the idea of making this pilgrimage to come see me play in the middle of nowhere. And I thought, see, that's where it's at. People say New York, you know, you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. No, you can make it from the middle of nowhere, Montana. You can make it anywhere. Let's get this straight. You don't understand where I've been.
Forget on Broadway. We're talking about Main Street, Bannock, Montana.
We're talking about Bannock.
That's great.
Oh, love song in the night, sing me home to you. Triangulate between the fields and lesser highways between. Gliding by me, all predictions point to total failure, but destiny just come and try me. No need to get surprised.
NickSpear.com is the name of Nick's website, and that's where folks can go to find out more information about Nick, his work. Nothing hard about Nick Spear, just like it sounds.
I'm amazed it was available.
I know. Good work. Good work on that. Thanks. Trainwreck of a Heart is the name of Nick's most recent recording project. And yeah, best of luck to you with all these different projects and everything related to the world of Nick Spear. And
the Nick experience.
Yeah, the Nick experience. And you know, and earlier in the interview, you talked about leaving something for your daughter and for, I don't know if you have any other kids, but.
Just one.
Yeah. And I think you've done good work.
Oh, thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
Good work. Thanks so much for being a part of Musician Spotlight. And we'll hopefully get a chance to talk again down the road.
I hope so.
Summer spent dreaming of the summer we were dreaming.
This is John Floridis. You've been listening to Musicians Spotlight. Today's program featured Andrew Davey and Kevin Jones of Bear's Den and Nick Spear. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org, as well through our own website, musicianspotlight.org. You can also find us online on Facebook and on Twitter. Our program is available as a podcast from those websites as well as through iTunes. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.